You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Saul Ostro. Saul, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to begin talk by talking about CPI. Many people may know of CPI, which is, you know, Critical Practices, Inc., which is fairly new. It was founded in 2010, as I understand, and been around since about then. Can you tell us a little bit about what your role is there and what CPI is?
Well, on the masthead, I'm founder and president. We're actually, originally we were a not-for-profit corporation. We're now a 501c3 and listed by the government as an educational institution, more or less. CPI is actually an organization of 18 people from various and sundry different backgrounds. About half of that is artists. The other half come from design, business and arts administration, all sorts of backgrounds. The idea for CPI was basically how to do things in a sort of non-institutional manner. We found that artists were too often, or younger artists especially, were too often thinking that their work would exist in museums and galleries, but they never actually thought of how that it would end up in a domestic setting. So I opened my loft to doing what became 21st Street Projects, in which six artists a year are invited to install their work at my loft. We have a viewing for them. They're free to bring people over by appointment, so on. One of the rules is furniture doesn't get moved, things don't get moved. They have to basically accommodate my lifestyle because I live here. Which actually, according to most artists, the types of conversations they have about their work in my space are significantly different than a studio visit or the types of conversations they have at usual venues for exhibitions.
Right, and that sounds in itself and in its inception a kind of not anti-institutional, but something that an institution can't reproduce. But did this kind of activity go on to create CPI? Was that kind of the impetus?
That was the impetus, because what happened was over a bottle of vodka, I and David Goodman and Edouard Goulier were sitting around and talking about how there's no space for conversation, what passes for an exchange of information, let's say panel discussions or lectures and so on and so forth, are situations in which ultimately the Q&A at the end is 15 minutes and tends not to actually be engaging. And what would it be like if we invited 30 people to discuss the topic?
Let me just stop you there for a minute. When was that? That are we talking about this bottle of vodka and talking about this discussion? Because I think this is kind of pivotal about what it means to kind of generate a conversation.
Right. That conversation was actually in 2010, towards the end of 2010, the beginning of 2011, because we're now in our fourth year of doing roundtable discussions.
And so we just jumped ahead there. But at the end of that conversation, you're all talking about, you know, that there isn't a space, because we're talking about something missing in the art world, or if that's one way to phrase it. So what was missing? What was the conversation? I mean, you said it in the kind of lecture format. That's true. It's usually very dry and boring. But there also wasn't a place for. It's artists and curators. Like, who is it exactly to get together, and what is the conversation about that you think were thinking that night with that kind of proposal?
We had found that, you know, two main conversations were being deferred to things like blogs and and listservs and things like that, in which there was not face-to-face exchange. The initial conversations were actually generated in terms of art world-ish subjects. The very first conversation was actually on criticality and things like that. And what was decided was, rather than having a presentation, we would invite somebody to do a 5-minute prompt, literally.
So tell me the first one, if you can remember, the first kind of organized one like that, where someone was invited to give a prompt or one of the early ones. Because this is the beginning of a structure of presenting ideas in an exchange that grew into CPI, right? So I'm kind of curious, what would be a first iteration of that?
The first iteration was we invited 30 people to have a conversation about an essay by Hal Foster that had just been published in October on criticism, and another essay by Peter Gear, I'm sorry, David Gears, also in that same issue, on painting. And we invited 30 people, multi-generational, actually at the age span at that initial discussion literally ran from about 22 to 9 to 85 years old. But
30 is a lot of the discussion. How did the discussion actually happen? How did that exchange of voices, or was it a small number of them that were actually talking? Because that's a big group.
You know, we're constantly told that this can't be done and you can't have a discussion with 30 people. One of the things we do is we don't go around the room. There are no introductions. So unless you already have social relationships with people in the room, you don't know who you're talking to. Somebody starts the prompt, and the next thing, somebody's responding. The person who gives the prompt is not the authority in the room. We basically say that everybody in the room is an authority. Our experience has been, out of 30 people, usually more than half contribute to the conversation, the conversation lasts for 90 minutes. Each conversation seems to have to set its own pattern.
Because I would imagine people would move into small groups as well. It's not that it's possible maybe for 30 people obviously to talk at once. There has to be different groupings, I would imagine.
Actually one big group. We arrange a big circle of chairs in the room. There's no head because it's a circle. There's no head to it. People literally, and there's no moderator. So what happens is people become inordinately polite. People defer to one another. People listen to let people finish saying what they're saying so that they can hear it and respond to it. And we're constantly told this doesn't work. And now for 4 years, it's worked on a regular basis.
How do you account for that disconnect with people thinking it won't work? And to me, it does seem counterintuitive that would work and everyone would be polite and it wouldn't be a kind of ham taking over or something. So how do you account for it working so well?
Everybody's there. Everybody's there by invitation. Everybody has RSVP'd. It's all been explained to them why they're there in terms of there's a set of rules that are sent out. So basically, accepting the RSVP, accepting the invitation, you've entered into an agreement, and people seemingly take that agreement seriously. We found one of the reasons we don't have a moderator is because when there's a moderator, the moderator models the conversation, which creates frustration. People have to vie for the attention of the moderator to be called on. And here, literally, people just, when they find an opening, enter into it, talk, and then somebody else picks up, and so on. And because we're not afraid of allowing the conversation to wander, we end up with really interesting, it begins in one place and ends in another. What we then do is we invite everybody to stay for another hour for wine and cheese, and at that point people find out who they're talking to, who they've been talking to, because that's when they break up into little groups and people literally begin to go, I wanted to say this, but I didn't have the opportunity. I wanted to respond to this, so on and so forth. And there's a very lively after conversation.
Go on. It's very interesting because in one way, social form, it's an institution, but also it's what I was going to begin to say. It's very creative. It's really a form of or could be a type of art, right?
Well, I was going to say we just did one in Budapest and one in Paris, where we were also told the Hungarians wouldn't be able to operate in this manner, and the Parisians would just argue with one another, and neither one. And everybody at those events were incredibly surprised that they would talk in such a manner in public to near strangers, and that the conversation had stayed sort of like polite in a manner.
Right, there's really something wonderfully civil about that in the age of the internet, where being polite isn't really the norm. And what you see text wise, maybe that really seems to stand out too. That kind of civil nature.
Only once in 4 years did I have to ask somebody to lower their voice.
Well, that would make sense. And so this is what CPI has been built around. This idea, this notion was essentially all wrapped around this idea that kind of we're discussing and describing. So how does an institution grow based on that? That seems so anti-institutional way. That seems so intimate and so much about, an interaction. Now there's a team of people, and CPI has grown enormously relative to that first conversation.
Actually, what's interesting is there'll probably, by the end of 2016, be a Paris chapter and a chapter in Denver. There's a group in Denver called Tilt that has approached us about affiliating themselves with us because they want to use our format to start having conversations in the Denver area. And we're trying to figure out what that means to us.
Well, I would think that's a very good idea. I mean, the idea of people wanting to replicate what you're doing is, in a way, the greatest compliment, isn't it? It's to be able to use a system that doesn't require, necessarily the founder or a specific board to run that could be replicated and perhaps reap similar benefits, because it's a process, isn't it? Really, it's a series of rules and a process.
Yes, it's all actually. That's perfect. It's all process, and it all has rule. It's all run by rules. There has to be parameters. We decided that it wasn't just a question of doing the opposite of everybody else, but that we really needed to discover and articulate what it was we wanted rather than what we didn't want. And this is a lot of what we've been doing and developing, continuing to develop. We just started our own imprint, CPI imprint, and the first book we did was with Dred Scott, which is an archive of his research material for a project that he's involved in, which is the reenactment of an 1811 slave revolt in New Orleans. And what we wanted out of the book was basically a book that reflected his process, not end product.
Now, would that be more where CPI is moving towards? Because in a way, publishing is more traditional. That's a more of a traditional form that an institution would do. And though you know, of course, that work sounds, you know, he's a great artist, and that work is important. It's a different element to the conversation that we were just describing.
Right.
Right? Or,
now,
or yeah, so
was,
how does that fit in with the growth of CPI is what I'm asking
It was one other type of thing we could take on, and the notion that producing books that were more, once again, more about process or the artist process than about the artist product. Was one of the things, rather than it being like a catalog. The book that we did with Dredd is, he is installed a project here of documents and photographs and things that came from his research. We literally, he did a walkthrough for us talking about each of those images, each of those objects and what they meant and the implication of it. So the text in the book is literally Dredd talking about every single one of those objects, every one of those images, and then and the reproduction of each image. So it was basically his thinking process, his reasoning, his ideas about those things, and obviously the issues of ideology and politics and the history of slavery in America.
And that sounds fantastic. And to me, the whole idea of CPI also feels like, because of its initial stance, perhaps, you know, filling a void, that this is an artist-founded, an artist-run institution to some, I mean, it is, right? Which is also what makes it distinctive. And,
yeah,
and, you know, I talk to different people who, you know, some are artists, some aren't. And that seems to be, you know, a very big difference also in how things are looked at. So maybe just to speak a little bit to that, you're, as an artist founder, it becomes an extension of your work or not your work,
well,
something else. But how do you fit it in with your art?
No, I'm no longer I haven't been an artist since the 90s. Basically, I function as a curator and a critic. But it was also the whole idea of, you know, David Goodman and Ed Wetzlier, both artists. Susan Bowman, who is our designer. Will Cameron, who's our publisher, so on and so forth. We no longer see the differentiation between curating the critical perspective, notion of making things like that. So, if you take a look at the type of work that we've shown here, the type of work that we've shown at 21st Street ranges from abstract painting to Melchin's cabinet of a huge spider-like sculpture to Dred Scott. The notion is that it's all a dialogue, and the dialogue has to be maintained, and that the dialogue is, you know, the question of cultural producers. When we actually tend not to use the word artist a lot, we actually talk about cultural production, and that we see ourselves as functioning within a sort of general discourse of cultural production.
Well, and that discourse is just, as you were saying, by interest with, you know, from other parts of the world or the country is essentially an educational mission, isn't it? Is
yeah.
It because other people can replicate the form, and it is about, I mean, what's the end game of cultural production? It is perhaps to have
exactly.
a conversation, or what else is it? Is that what cultural production is for? I mean, I can't think of what else it's for. It's beauty, enjoyment, right? Sensuality.
Beauty, enjoyment, the exchange of values, the exchange of criteria, it's the debate over what we want as opposed to what we have. You know, cultural production, literally, you know, culture, the notion of what kind of culture do we want? What do we want to form? And for, you know, part of what the impetus behind CPI was rather than constantly being put in the position of being reactive, it was like, okay, what do we want? We're in the privileged position of being able to create what we want rather than dealing with what we don't want. So we, you know, we actually say we don't stand in opposition to the institution. We don't criticize the institution. We just do what we can.
And in terms of how artists come to you or you make new relationships, is how does that process differ from an institution, or how do artists get to know you or apply for things that might be happening with CPI?
There are three people who handle, let's say, 21st Street. People come to, people are recommended to them because people know that that's what they're doing. People approach them, so on and so forth. And then the process is actually just starting right now. By June, they will tell me the six artists who are going to be presenting in my place. I have nothing to do with, at this point, I no longer have anything to do with what gets shown here. Literally, and those three people who are working on that come from three different backgrounds and are connected to differing sectors of the world, or the art world, let's say. So that allows and continues the diversity.
Are there conversations, sorry to interrupt you, that are also still open to the public that people can come to or sign up for?
There is a button on our website for those who are interested who would like to be invited. And actually, because of this new relationship with Denver, there will eventually be on our website a registration button in which people can register, and that registration will give them access to the audio archive of previous conversations. The way the invitations to the conversations go is the person who does the prompt invites two-thirds of the participants, and we invite one-third of them, so that there's never hegemony. And a lot of the people who end up getting, let's say, later invited to things are people that we've met at previous LTRs. But pretty much, also one of the things that's sort of strange and different about us is there's no core. It's not like there's ever going to be the 10 same people at every every roundtable discussion.
Right. And how is that avoided? Because that is important. That is a kind of common institutional sort of flaw similar group.
As I said, the prompter invites two-thirds of the people. The prompters come from all different backgrounds.
Right, so it's weighted to the prompter's audience a bit.
Because we don't know the people the prompters invite, we invite 10 people that we think would be interested, that we've met over the course of the years, who would be interested in that subject.
Hmm.
So, and let's say the next three roundtable discussions, the next one is on consent. The one after that is on the robotic future. And the final one for this year is on science fiction.
Well, that sounds very exciting. I hope more people will
reach out and learn
more.
As I was going to say real fast, anybody who wants to replicate, we tend to see everything that we do as portable. Anybody who wants to can contact us, and we'll send them the rules of the game, and they can see if it works for them.
I love that. I love that idea. I'm so glad you said that, because that is, that's what seems like this can be a movement, if you're interested to learn more, because it is a process that can be replicated and sounds like one that's also stimulating for all parties involved, that it's just simply stimulating. I mean, part of the reason I like doing these interviews is it's stimulating. I can't imagine how much more it would be to have a conversation with 30 people regularly,
Well, I'll send you an invite one day and you can come and participate.
But I look forward to that. Saul, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking with you about CPI and its founding.
Oh, no, thank you for inviting us.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.